The Last Word with Matt Cooper. Weekdays from 4:30.
There were 48 victims of the Stardust Fire in 1981. It has taken 43 years for an inquest to come up with a conclusion as to what happened. We will be joined in a moment by some relatives of those who lost their lives at the Stardust. But first, Stephanie Ronan is the Today FM newsroom reporter who is there. Stephanie, just describe what happened after 2 o'clock today, please.
Yeah, and I hope I do it justice, because the atmosphere in the courtroom this afternoon, it was just so emotional, tense, anxious, nerve-wracking. I actually was shaking at one point. You could just really feel how sick almost everybody felt and how much hung on these verdicts. There wasn't a space to sit down. The legal teams actually ended up standing up and standing to the side and letting the family members sit down in their chairs. There was just standing room then only. And at 2 o'clock, the juror members came out one by one and they went through each of the victims, 48 of them, and said how they died in terms of medical death, inhalation of fumes, burns and things like that. And then came the big moment when it was announced that all 48 of the victims in 1981, that Valentine's Day at the Stardust nightclub, they were unlawfully killed.
What is the significance of that from a legal point of view, Lisa? Oh, sorry, Stephanie.
Well, look, it's hugely significant because if you remember, I'm from a generation, I was born in 1982 and Stardust was always part of my life, but I never fully knew what happened. And these inquests allowed it to be ventilated, for it to be given breath and oxygen, and for us to understand what happened on that fateful night. That 800 people went to a nightclub, they went to a disco, they went to a dance competition. You know, it was the 80s, it was a different time. You know, there were sometimes, you know, things I wouldn't have thought, that, you know, people had to go in three-piece suits and ties, because apparently that's how you got in back then. And ties would actually be passed back to ensure that people got in. And, you know, it was a night of excitement and people were really looking forward to it. And then utter tragedy happened when this fire broke out. And then afterwards, you know, to add insult to injury, the relatives were so aghast when the Keane Tribunal found that the probable cause was arson. Now, that was thrown out in 2009, but it lingered. You know, this idea that not only did a fire start, but somebody inside started it. And that really, really impacted on their lives. These fires, it killed 48 people, but these inquests heard about the rippling effect. Mothers said that they became the mothers they weren't, that their children, their surviving children, were brought up differently because they couldn't be the mothers they wanted to be. They were left, families were left with holes, in their hearts, that, you know, their families were brought up differently. The substance abuse happened and it changed generations. And they've long said that these people, that it wasn't arson. So to come back today and have the finding of unlawfully killing is huge for them. And also, Matt, I just think it's very noteworthy, two other points to make. The jury also found that the doors that night, that some of the doors, they were locked or they were chained or they were obstructed, that the carpet tilings on the wall significantly caused the fire to spread rapidly, that the filling in the seats caused the fire to spread rapidly. And something I never knew that I think is crucially important, that this fire was started by an electrical fault in the hot press.
I think the points in relation to the exits been locked, chained or otherwise obstructed is very, very important and has been a source of much controversy over the years. I want to talk, Stephanie, stay there please, but I want to bring in a couple of the relatives of those who died. And Lisa Lawler, you were how old when your parents, Francis and Maureen Lawler, died at the Stardust?
I was 17 months old.
So you've no memories of them, have you?
No. I don't remember them. I never saw them walking. I don't remember them talking. I don't remember them holding me. I don't remember them leaving me. And I've never seen them since.
But they've always been with you throughout your life.
Oh yeah, there's no doubt they're most definitely with me today. My fate has brought me to where I am today, and that's my parents. I believe in them. And I knew I knew I had an inclination this morning that they were around me and that they were beside me in that courtroom. There's no doubt.
So what was it like for you when you got the verdict this afternoon and that unlawful killing verdict?
When my first reaction was to jump around and shout out, which we all did. And my other reaction was that my soul was rested, that I knew that one day that this would come. It's just a shame it took 43 years, but I knew it would come. I knew it would come.
How difficult was it over those 43 years? Well, maybe not all of them, because it would have been a few years before you would have been old enough to understand the injustice of not getting an inquest verdict and of nothing been done on the back of it. But what has it been like over those years to find that there has been, on the part of the state, an unwillingness to confront what happened that evening?
Well, I mean, you know, I've been deeply upset and deeply hurt, not without the loss of my parents. That has deeply upset me. It's deeply hurt me. It's embedded into me. I mean, I was in nappies and Stardust happened, and I'm still here in Stardust. I'm a symbol of this tragedy that's happened. It's nearly become, you know, it's second nature to me, Stardust. You know, Stardust is spoken in hushed tones around me because it's so tragic. You know, even the age I am now, people still call me the Stardust baby because that's what I am. You know, it's the baby that lost her parents, both of them.
Stay there, please, Lisa. I want to bring in Samantha Mangan. Samantha, thank you very much for joining us. Samantha, who did you lose in the Stardust fire?
I lost my mother, Helena Mangan. She was only 22 and I was actually 4 and a half when she died.
Do you remember her?
I have a few memories, yeah. I actually remember her getting ready that night, doing her hair, getting ready to leave, giving me a kiss and a hug, and telling me to go to bed and sleep, and in the morning we would go off into town and go shopping. And when I woke up that next morning, we had bunk beds because we still lived in the family home where her parents and brothers and sisters. I climbed up onto the bunk bed to have a look, to wake her up and have a cuddle. And her bed hadn't been made and she wasn't there. I go down the stairs and she's still not there. There's loads of people in the house I don't know, people coming in and out all the time. And I still just couldn't find me, ma'am. And she never came home. I waited and she never came back.
What was it like growing up without her then, and knowing the circumstances in which she had died?
Devastating. My mom was my whole world. She was my everything. She was a single parent, and she was to me both mother and father. She was my life. She protected me, and not to have her around for all the decisions in my life, getting married, having my own children, looking for advice off her. It was devastating. Throughout my years, I pretended that she was still alive and that she just lost her memory and that she would come back to me when she found her memory. Just that was the way I coped, even though I knew she had died. But for me, I was like, no, my mom would never leave me. She'd come home, she's lost her memory, and she would be back.
One of the things for outsiders looking into the inquest, which I think was most compelling and striking, was the pen portraits that everyone was allowed to draw of those who had died. And I've read what was written and said about your mother. How important was that to be able to tell her story of what she was like?
It was very important because she wasn't just a number. She wasn't just some person who died. She was my mother. She wasn't only a mother. She was a sister. She was an aunt. She was a daughter. You know, she had a life that she was looking forward to. Like, the previous year, she'd only got her first ever job. She only had her first holiday. And she was looking forward to making a better life for the both of us, that we could have holidays, that she'd get a house together. We could do a lot of things. She was looking forward to that, not only were we mother and daughter, that we could be best friends. That was one of our things she really wanted, that we could be more than mother and daughter. And I never got that chance. It was ripped away from me. And the annoying thing is that 43 years later, the evidence is from 43 years. There was no new evidence. It's the same that was back in 1981. And I've had to wait all these years for the answer, which I shouldn't have had to. My grandmother protected me from the service. I wasn't paraded or put into anything to the service as I was younger. It was only as I got older, when I got our coroner's report, I wanted to fight and I wanted to get justice for my mum.
Lisa Lawler, how important was it for you that the lives of your parents, Francis and Maureen, were remembered in the pen portraits at the outset of this inquest?
Well, I suppose it was very important. Just what Samantha said there, I felt the same. I always felt that my mother would one day come back. She would return. I mean, I knew the first day at school that she had to be back then. You know, like, this was the biggest kind of day in the life of a four-year-old. And I knew that she had to walk through the door that day. And my grandmother took me by the hand and said, unfortunately, they're not coming home, either of them. And you're starting school now. And that's when it hit me, you know. And I really did want her to come home. I wanted both of them just back. And, I mean, I've screamed into my pillow more times than I can remember. And that was the way it was. They weren't coming back, and they didn't come back. They died. And that's the unfortunate part of it, you know.
And you can never bring them back. But do you feel a little bit better as a result of today?
I most certainly do. I feel like now that we recognise, and as Samantha said, you know, we recognise that they're not just numbers anymore. We're human people. They went out for a night out and they just didn't come home. Through no fault of their own.
Lisa Lawler and Samantha Mangan, thank you very much for being with us. I want to go back to you, Stephanie Rowan, before I talk to one of the lawyers for the families, because I'm just looking at pictures from today of people going in to the inquest for this particular verdict. I'm just looking, for example, Bridget McDermott, mother of three of the startled victims. I mean, just how incredibly distressing it must have been at the time and for all the years since to have lost three of your children. So just how emotional were people afterwards leaving the inquest, Stephanie?
They were really emotional. And, you know, I was talking to another mother, Gertrude Barrett. She lost her 17-year-old son, Michael. He was, in fact, the only staff member. He was a DJ that night and he was the only staff member who died. And she was saying to me, when Michael died, he was body bag number 38. And she said to me, you know, that haunted her. And, you know, Gertrude would come down. She didn't miss one single day of these inquests. One day during the jury deliberations, I saw her sprinkling holy water in the corner. She was just waiting for the jury to come back. And, you know, this is how important the unlawful killing verdict was to her. And then you were just speaking there to Lisa Lawler. And Lisa told me, and I just found this very upsetting, she said that she came down to one day of the evidence, and very graphic evidence was shown of people's handprints in the windows of the welding of the way the toilets, the windows were welded shut. And she said she saw the handprints still there after the fire of people trying to escape with their lives. And she said she couldn't come back for a while, that haunted her so much. So this is something, you know, that has been lingering in North Dublin for 43 years. And it was a hugely, hugely emotional day. But Gertrude said to me, you know, tomorrow I'll get up and tomorrow I'll get on with my life. But I know you're speaking to a lawyer now and they want an apology. That's their next step from the government for what happened.
Thank you very much, Stephanie Rowan, for being with us. Dermot Bracknell is a solicitor with Phoenix Law. And Dermot, can you just explain perhaps, please, the legal significance of the finding of an unlawful killing? Does that mean that more can follow as a result of that inquest finding?
Well, for the moment, the families are happy with their verdict today. We don't need to look on past this. The family have got their truth. In terms of the importance of unlawful killing, the jury had to be sure of unlawful killing beyond reasonable doubt, different to any other verdict, which shows how resounding it was and how much of an important thing, or important find it was for the family. For now, the families have requested a state apology. They're happy that they finally got the truth and justice, as you heard before. Names to what were numbers before.
Yeah, there is a really wonderful statement out from President Michael D. Higgins in which he says today's verdict at the Dublin District Coroner's Court of unlawful killing in the case of each of the 48 young people who lost their lives in the Stardust fire on the morning of 14th February 1981 is one that, while not bringing their loved ones back, is of the deepest importance for all those whose lives were so irreparably altered by that most appalling of days. Those who had, as relatives, to carry a terrible grief, made worse by questions left unanswered. This afternoon's verdict is a vindication of the fight of those relatives, a promise fulfilled, carried out over 43 long years by the relative friends and community of the 48 young people, all aged between 16 and 27, who had their lives cut short on a night they had simply set out to spend and enjoy in the company of their friends. And it continues, and it strikes me as a more generous statement than the one that has come from either the Taoiseach or the Minister for Justice this evening. So a formal apology from the state, is that what you believe should come now?
I think it was said by Samantha there, it was very important. They shouldn't have been in that room today. These inquests shouldn't have been happening today. If it was done right by the state at the time, and they wouldn't have been there today, they wouldn't have waited 43 years to get truth and justice. So the importance of a state, or the need for a state apology, is important to put these people through it. And to put these people through listening to heavy evidence for 111 days where they could have been moved on with their life 43 years ago, they could have been grieving properly then. I think a state apology is completely necessary. I think it's the state to put them in up in the rotunda in the pillar room today. And if it had been done properly at the time, there would be no, we wouldn't have been there today, and they should apologise for doing that.
Dermot Bracknell, thank you very much for being with us. And we keep mentioning that 48 people died. And I think it would be appropriate if we just name all of those people, that they're not just numbers, as we heard, that they're all individual people. So the list that I have of the 48 people is Michael Barrett, Richard Bennett, Carol Bissett, James Buckley, Paula Byrne, Caroline Carey, John Colgan, Jacqueline Croker, Liam Dunn, Michael Farrell, David Flood, Thelma Fraser, Michael French, Josephine Glenn, Michael Griffiths, Robert Hillock, Brian Hobbs, Eugene Hogan, Myrta Kavanagh, Martina Keegan, Mary Keegan, Robert Kelly, Mary Kennedy, Mary Kenny, Margaret Kiernan, Sandra Lawless, Francis Lawler, Maureen Lawler, Paula Lewis, Eamon Lockman, George McDermott, Marcella McDermott, William McDermott, Julie MacDonald, Teresa MacDonald, Gerard McGrath, Caroline McHugh, Donna Mahon, Helena Mangan, James Miller, Susan Morgan, David Morton, Kathleen Muldoon, George O'Connor, Brendan O'Mara, John Stout, Margaret Thornton, and Paul Wade. Many of their relatives have passed away in the last 43 years and didn't live to see this day, but many of their relatives are still alive, and hopefully for them today's inquest decision will bring some peace and closure to them.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper. Weekdays from 4:30. Today.